Hi, I'm Mark Cuban.
I'm Jackie Keast, and welcome to On the Tools. Every Wednesday.
You mean hump day?
We talk about what we've been watching, reading, listening to, and scrolling through. We're self-appointed experts on content.
Because that's our real job.
And making each other laugh.
But that's what we do mostly during 9 to 5.
Welcome to On the Tools.
Welcome. Hey, Jackie Keast, great to see you. Look at you, all formal and dolled up. Where are you going?
To the Actor Awards. Oh. Gone from a towel to a gown. I can do it all. Get yourself a woman who can do it all.
Mardi Gras, you'll be in pumps. You'll be in pumps and a cheerleading outfit.
They have done that before, so I have to think of something else.
What are the Actor Awards, if our listeners don't know?
The Australian Academy of Cinema and Television Arts Awards.
Ooh, look at you. Anyway, I'm going this year myself.
Oh, are you?
Yes, I've got a special invite.
Well, where's your tuxedo?
So I've got a few tuxes. Don't you worry about that. They call me Tuxedo Cuban.
No one has ever called you that in your life.
So what am I talking about this week, I hear you ask? I've got two Netflix, one's a Netflix series documentary. It's Pepsi, Where's My Jet? And Running with the Devil, The Wild World of John McAfee, a feature documentary. And what are you going to be talking us through?
I'm going to talk about a book by Helen Garner called House of Grief and a comedian and TikTok star, Laura Ramoso.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So where do I start? I think if you and I produce this series, the title would probably be Pepsi, Where's My Jet, Bitch? Bitch. I've seen this series lingering around on my Netflix carousel for a little while, and to be honest, the title sort of put me off because I kept thinking about the Pepsi Taste Challenge. and don't you know it? That's exactly how the doco started. It's probably one of the funniest, most riveting docos I've watched in a long time. It centers around a Pepsi promotion launched in the mid-90s. You know, it's kind of a time when advertising had colossally large budgets and much less media fragmentation than...
Every pop star did a Pepsi ad.
You know it.
Like Spice Girls,
Michael
even had a song.
Jackson, Britney Spears, even Ray Charles, Queen, Beyonce, Jennifer Lopez, David Beckham. He's not a pop star, but he might as well be. He's married to one. Huge budgets. And it's a great doco. But this doco focuses particularly on a promotion PepsiCo aired in the mid-90s. Series of commercials aimed at promoting Pepsi products via an assorted point system, associated point system, sorry. So every time you purchase a Pepsi product, you could collect points that could be redeemed to claim prizes such as T-shirts, sunglasses, hoodies, leather jackets. You know, you get the picture. But one commercial showed that for 7 million points, the prize was, now get this, a Harrier jump jet, right?
What?
Yeah, military vertical takeoff jet, a Harrier. I think it's
why do they have one of those just sitting around?
I think it's an AV-8 Harrier 2 jet, right? So its value at the time was estimated at like $23 million. This is the mid-90s. And while they state that the commercial was tongue-in-cheek, it lacked any disclaimers, right, indicating that it was a joke. So enter John Leonard. He's a 21-year-old business student who became obsessed with the Harrier fighter. And, you know, kind of fantasized about landing this thing in the front of his school or uni or whatever.
Being the coolest kid.
I'll take you for a burn in my jet.
I go to school in a jet. Right.
Anyway, he's quite a clever guy, all-American dude, really. Kind of just, there's something about him that just genuine, nice, sweet guy, hardworking, you know. Anyway, he kind of became obsessed, had post-it notes everywhere, started doing all this research. and discovered that it was possible to purchase Pepsi points for 10 cents each, and calculated that 7 million points would cost $700,000 US.
Oh, my
right?
God.
So beyond that, the rules, the Pepsi rules for this promotion stated you only required a minimum of 15 Pepsi points worth of physical tags from Pepsi products. So, you know, you go and buy 15 bottles of whatever, Pepsi products, you take those tags, you send them in, or you whatever you do with them. And he then went out and spoke to a bunch of investors, right? So he convinced five investors to help him buy the remaining points. Now, remember, a fighter jet is valued at $23 million. So a $700,000 investment for $23 million ROI is pretty good return. So yeah. So five investors would each invest $140,000, and their individual returns split six ways would be about $3.8 million each. It's kind of a no-brainer, right? Anyway, one of those investors was a guy called Todd Hoffman, a kind of gruff, tell-it-like-it-is sort of bloke with an Al Pacino type of vibe about him, right? At the start, they do like a tongue-in-cheek, you know, taste test, you know, drink this, you know, which one do you prefer? And anyway, the camera's rolling. He just goes, they're both shit, right? It tastes like shit. I wouldn't drink it. It's garbage, right? So he's a very funny character. So anyway, eventually John Leonard sends in his points and a check to claim the 7 million points to claim the jet. And I won't get into the nitty-gritty because I don't want to ruin it for our listeners, but it is a fabulous journey and remarkably moving, because throughout all of the shenanigans, and, you know, there's lawyers involved, there's court cases, there's meetings with the Pepsi board. I mean, the whole shebang, right? The management team, Pepsi management team.
So they essentially never imagined that anyone would ever get the fighter jet.
No, I don't think so, right? And they probably should have done their math homework, which they obviously didn't do. But, you know, in all this sort of stuff, you know, he's made some real enduring friendships that were created. And interestingly, I thought the doco used a tempo and style similar to the shows and advertisements back in the 90s. So it kind of...
Oh, so they kind of has the feel.
Yeah, yeah, it kind of has that retro feel. It's kind of... It feels like fun, and they kind of...
Pepsi Max.
They use all these kind of graphics. It was just fantastic. And you can imagine senior management at PepsiCo. You know, I'm sure there were a lot of what-the-fuck meetings, right? it's one of those, and you know, normally when I'm watching something like this, you know, I'll have some device going, but I was completely focused on this.
You're not paying attention.
No, but of course, this whole documentary kind of opens up debate about contract law and whether promotions are legitimate, you know, probably even more so these days with all the offers and competitions on social media. As a youngster, I was obsessed with Marvel comics, and my neighbour and I would liaise with each other in relation to who would buy what comic to avoid duplicating purchases, and we sort of started our own private comic library between us. And I remember that we were, I don't know, maybe 10, and there was an advertisement in the back of the comic for real X-ray glasses that we could make money buying, like selling this kind of weird newspaper called Grits. And I remember he and I calling the number, because back then you couldn't dial directly. You had to be connected by an operator. And we kind of gave the number, and it was this organization or this thing was located in Connecticut, USA.
Oh, my God, how much would have that cost?
It cost a bomb. Anyway, but we didn't know how to pronounce Connecticut, and I remember we called it Kentucket, right? And suffice to say, the operator didn't connect us through, and ultimately saved us from a good walloping, I think. But, you know, also, like, you know, that's completely false advertising. There's no such thing as X-ray glasses.
I can see people in clothing.
All that rubbish, right? Anyway, it is, I'll watch it again because it is so funny and warm and ridiculous. And, you know, it's kind of interesting in the sense of how a big multinational like PepsiCo could get things so wrong. Yeah, fascinating documentary, and left you feeling really good. It's very uplifting.
That's good.
Really worth watching. So don't let the title kind of put you off. It's definitely not about the taste test.
I never see Pepsi anymore.
I love Pepsi. I actually prefer Pepsi.
Do you? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if I love Pepsi more than
that. No, is it? It's different.
Like, yeah. It does taste, I think it tastes different.
Yeah. No, Pepsi. I'm a Pepsi man through and through. What do you got?
So I have got the book House of Grief by Helen Garner. Most Australians probably remember this, but on Father's Day in 2005 in regional Victoria, Robert Farquharson drove off the Princess Highway and he crashed his car into a dam. His three sons, who were in the car with him, drowned. He escaped. A year before, his wife had left him for another man. She kept their house. She kept his favourite car. And he only saw the kids on the weekends. In the tabloids, he became known as the Father's Day Killer. And the subsequent court case raised the question, was this really tragic accident, or was it a deliberate premeditated murder, like some horribly unimaginable way to get back at his ex?
But that happened with that other woman too, right? Remember, what was her name? They were watching a cricket match and the father...
Is it the one where he drove off the jetty?
No, he stabbed his son on the...
Oh, yes.
Remember?
Yeah.
And she went. She was a big advocate for like a whole bunch of stuff and sort of went...
Yes, oh, that's... Oh.
What's her name?
Rosie Batty.
Yeah.
Her name, yeah.
I went to that was just gut-wrenching, that whole story.
Yeah. So Helen Garner wrote a book about the case around this. So she followed the case for 7 years through the original trial, the appeal, and then the retrial. I read this book in like 2 days. It just consumed me. Like Helen Garner, she's just an incredible writer. So if you're a foreign listener, you're not familiar with her, she's one of Australia's leading nonfiction writers and a novelist as well. This isn't her first book, From Inside a Court. She's also written a book called Joe Cinque's Consolation, which I've also read, which follows another murder trial, one where a woman is accused of murdering her boyfriend after drugging him with Rohypnol and then injecting him with a lethal dose of heroin. But Robert's argument is that he suffered coughing fit at the wheel, which made him black out, and that's why he crashed a car. So his argument in court was that it wasn't a murder, but it was a tragedy. Yet when he came out of the water, his request to the first car that passed him by was not to get the emergency services, not for them to help him swim back into the dam to get his children out, which seems natural to expect. Instead, it was for those men to take him to his ex-wife to let her know. So was he just in shock, or did he just want to kind of deliver her the news in some sort of incredibly twisted way? So Garner, she's a really insightful writer, so she raises the point, like, actually, we want Robert to be innocent, because even if we can't rationally believe he is, because the alternative is so incomprehensible. Like, you can't accept that someone would ever seek to kill their children. She hears...
Was he charged with murder?
Yes.
He was, yeah.
Yes, yeah. But she, like, hears a lawyer walking past the court. I've got two reactions to this. He can't possibly have done it, but there's no other explanation. So I guess, yeah, what is wonderful about Garner's writing, in addition to being very wry and clever and compassionate, it's really immersive. So we feel like we're in the court with, and whereas maybe another writer may have taken traditional kind of journalistic facts of the case approach to the book, not that Garner isn't being factual, but it's more her own reading of the trial, and she inserts herself into it, and so it's kind of a human reading. She's trying not to just logically understand what happened, but emotionally understand it as well. And she includes people, like observations from people she talks to about the case, even when she's going to buy her groceries and stuff like that. Their feelings about it, her honest reactions to the evidence, her doubts, her sense of the people involved. And she, like, the defense some points seems to go in depth about, like, really minute detail, like about the curve of the road, the tire angles, the steering inputs. And, like, she's describing this and about how she's so bored. And so is much of the room. Like, the journalist next to her is doing a crossword. And, like, that's so jarring, and that kind of thing to imagine. It's a court case about children that have died. There's people, it's like, that's, Like she observes that the defense is probably actually maybe in trying to intentionally bore the jury, like to make them feel so stupid to, or like,
well, I guess the
like they can't understand what is going on. Yeah. So like to be overwhelm them so they feel like, okay, well, I'll just accept what you're saying because I can't understand, like it can't really get, it's so technical, I can't really get it. And it's full of these kind of sorts of observations. So it's this balancing of sort of human emotion and what drives people against this logic of the court of law, which makes it really consuming. Like I really couldn't put it down. Yeah, I really recommend it.
Wow. Was it very dark?
Well, yeah, but I think the way she writes it, it's super emotional. But
was it more a kind of clinical approach?
No, it's not. I don't think it is at all. Like she's trying to understand the emotions of the everyone involved in it. And it's almost like the guy that he was so ordinary. He's just like a seemed like a normal kind of person, which makes it all the more
horrific.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not like he isn't like us because he kinda is. He's just like this, like his father-in-law, I think, describes him as being like a bit of a sook, like just is like kind of a pathetic man, but he's not this, yeah, like heartless kind of, I don't know. Well, it's just, it's really interesting.
Wow. Okay. What was that called again?
A House of Grief.
House of Grief. Well, on a lighter note.
Yeah, sorry. Way to bring the mood down.
I watched a documentary, feature documentary on Netflix, Running with the Devil, The Wild World of John McAfee.
I've watched it.
Oh, my God. there are truly some stories that are stranger than fiction, but
100%.
None are quite so bizarre as crazy as Running with the Devil, The Wild World of John McAfee. His CV is pretty long and accomplished, which includes working for NASA, creating the McAfee antivirus. And if you're old enough to remember the McAfee antivirus, once installed, it was all but impossible to remove, sort of like attempting to get shit off your shoe. It was terrible.
There's like a pop-up every minute.
I hated it. his other endeavors included like dabbles in cryptocurrency, you know, smartphone apps, which according to him enabled him to eavesdrop on the world and record all sorts of conversations.
Wasn't he saying he was being pursued by the Bulgarian government?
I think a whole bunch of
like
governments.
That.
And, you know, so anyway, and then he also set up that yoga retreat. That he was kind of sitting in the middle like a yogi.
He's done so many things that I can't even like remember them.
It was just
insane.
Bizarre, but he did do them. And, you know, obviously he was really smart, really capable. And at his peak, you know, John McAfee was worth $100 million. And, you know, going back all that time, that was so much money. So anyway, he's crazy life culminates in one dramatic incident where he's suspected of killing Gregor Fall, his neighbor in Belize. And it was over some dogs and his parrots, and he was the prime suspect. And then he basically does a runner off into the jungles of South America where he disappears, where we meet his rather bizarre and odd-looking teenage girlfriend.
Yes.
That was so strange. It was like, anyway, reasons never really explained. I still don't understand. And I've watched that intro maybe three or four times, seeing if I'd missed something. He gets in touch with a bunch of journalists, a film crew. Who are they? They work for
Vice.
Vice, that's right.
Yeah.
And he decides to invite the film crew to document basically his madness. And so hundreds of hours never seen before broadcast footage, you know, of McAfee's being pursued by authorities. You know, he illegally departs a country, then illegally arrives in another country without passports or visas. It's a story that is really larger than life. You know, this character, this guy who I think once ran for president,
yes,
and escaped prison multiple times. I just sat through this thing and thought, what the fuck is going on? It was.
I watched this with my parents, and I think we paused it halfway through to make like a cup of tea or something like that. And my dad turns around and goes, "This is the weirdest documentary I've ever
it's
seen."
It's so weird, right? And I don't understand the purpose. And you know what's immediately evident is that McAfee is this crazy, flamboyant, egomaniac, and certainly no stranger to the camera. You know,
or drugs.
Or drugs. That's right. I forgot about that. And you know, he comments several times about how comfortable he is with cameras all around him. And for me, there's this one particularly surreal and unintentionally hilarious moment where he's about to get arrested, detained by authorities, I think in South America somewhere. So, you know, I think there were military soldiers there. So, you know, it could have gone really pear-shaped. And he starts playing the flute. Do you remember that? And it was just that sort of crazy and unhinged moment that just keeps you sucked in, and you just think, what is wrong with this guy? It is really bizarre. It's really funny. He traveled, I think, in one of the things, like, you know, he just obviously still had access to so much cash. So he traveled with cash. He had that plastic kind of thing that he opened up, and there was like 30 bits of gold bullion in there. Do you remember that? It's yes. Nuts.
And then all the guns that he had at one point is just
all the guns,
an insane amount of weapons.
Yeah, and I won't go into any more of it. Just, you have to take the journey. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's like you've just.
But there's people that one of the vice guys that comes to film him in the end just stays around and he's almost got Stockholm syndrome. Like, it's like he sees him as his friend, even though he's like, this guy is nuts, and he one point leaves because he fears for his life.
But that's John McAfee, isn't it? Because he doesn't really have any friends. He just uses people. And
yeah,
I think,
but he's extremely charismatic, yeah. And like, I guess pulls people into his orbit.
But yeah, so it's a crazy documentary. I still don't know why. I still don't.
No.
There's lots of it I don't understand.
You've got to like stop questioning how any of it can be possible and just enjoy
it. Well, at some
the ride,
stage, you can't go, this can't be true, but it is. Every single bit
yeah.
is.
This is what happens when you're insane and have a shitload of money.
He needed to be medicated, and he was mostly, but not with the right drugs.
Yeah, instead with bath salts.
Yes, there's something very wrong with him. So if you're inclined, I really strongly urge you to watch Run with the Devil, The Wild World of John McAfee. You'll need a couple of stiff drinks, I think, but that's on Netflix and really worthwhile watching.
Yeah. So I've been scrolling through a comedian on TikTok. Her name is Laura Ramoso. So it's at @LAU_Ramoso, RAMOSO. So she's a comedian from Italy and Germany. She's lived all around the world, but she's currently based in Toronto. And she does sketches on TikTok and Instagram. I don't really quite remember how I came across her, but it was in definitely one of my midnight scrolling sessions, doom scrolling when I couldn't sleep. And then I stayed for like awake for another 2 hours watching basically every video she's ever made. She has an Italian father and a German mother, and she often imitates them in sketches and particular situations. And these are my favorite videos that she does. The Italian dad in particular is very relatable to me. My dad is not Italian, but I think so much of him speaks to universal dad behavior. Like, there's a sketch called My Italian Father When the Dishwasher Breaks, and that's probably my favorite. I sent it to my brother immediately because it actually just is a dad.
Why? What is it? What does he do?
Like, yelling at you to come and help him fix something. And then everything you do to try to assist him is wrong. And almost all my fights with my dad have happened as a result of me trying to help him as he is assembling something while sweating profusely, not reading the manual, swearing and yelling at anyone that tries to enter the vicinity. If he has to install something now, we understand that I'm just going to go walk outside and he's not to talk to me.
I think that's just a bloke thing. I saw something,
right?
I saw something where there was a team of men and a team of women. They had to build something. And the men just went line by line by line and were erecting this thing, whereas the women didn't do anything and just read the whole thing first. Anyway,
yes.
The line at the end said, you don't have to build this, right? They're just going, what are they doing? Why aren't they building this? We've got it all over them. And then they get to the end of this thing, and of course the women beat them. But I think it's just a bloke thing. They don't read.
It's like my dad. Someone scraped my car ages ago, and so the paint come off. And so my dad's like, I'll cover the paint for you. So he went and bought new paint, and was, instead of reading the instructions, he just sprayed it on the car. And it wasn't mixed properly, like the seal. I don't know what he did, but it looked worse than when he began, and you could not fix it. It was like this big cellulite-y blob of paint on my car for years until
the
car got
Was that the Suzuki?
Later. Yeah. And thanks, Dad. It looks terrible.
Poor Chris.
So the top comment on the TikTok under this dishwasher video is, I've always said anyone who thinks men are less emotional has never held a flashlight for their dad. This is it 100%. There's also my Italian father when his team is playing, which sees her dad is going to pace the room for half an hour ahead of the match, and then he's unable to get the program to work on his computer so he can watch it. So he starts yelling at his daughter to help him. Again, very relatable to me. And he's typing with one finger, which is actually how my dad types. And then he's just screaming in despair as his team loses. And then when they score a goal, he's euphoric. And this, again, is actually my dad, who, if you, like, cannot comprehend the screaming that is coming out of him when his AFL team is playing. And when they win, he calls my brother and he sings the team song down the phone with him at the top of his lungs, which I guess is them bonding, but I find it very strange. There's also my Italian father on every road trip. And he does this thing which he calls the international dad reach, which is definitely something my dad does, which is reaching his arm into the back seat for you to give him snacks. Which put chips in his hand, which is definitely something my dad used to do. Speaking on speakerphone to his doctor, yelling down the phone for some reason because he thinks dads think you need to be yelled to be heard on speakerphone. So I grew up in Newcastle and we were often drive to Sydney for various reasons. And there was many trips where my dad was on speakerphone to his friends or work colleagues for the whole 2.5 hour drive where I just have to sit there silently staring out the window waiting for it to end. Sorry, Dad, I really love you.
But that's why they moved away.
Well, I moved away. But there's also I really love the German mother as well. So there's my German mother when she opens my closet. It would be relatable to any woman who has had a nosy mother go through her clothes. Like, this is too short. This is eating you up. Where is that one T-shirt I bought you in 2006? Oh, you don't have it anymore. Of course you don't. Everything I buy you, you throw away. Shout out to my own mum, who I showed her my Depop, and then she got really offended because she saw that I was selling clothes that she gave me.
See, that's your error. That's your mistake. My mum was a terrible snoop. Is that a female thing? She was horrible.
I showed this to my mum, so that was my own fault.
No, mum used to go through all my stuff, and they were very religious. And one day I thought, I'll show you, and I created a fictitious drug order, right? I was so straight as a child, like really just very straight. And, of course, she found this thing and handed it. So after the service, I got called in by the minister. And then, like, he confronted me with this stupid bit of paper. And it was, and no matter what I said, I was guilty.
Just what was in your
ridiculous.
Drug order?
It was, mate, I didn't even know what a trip was. I didn't know heroin. I think there was even heroin in there. You know, I'm terrified of injections, right? So it was just ridiculous. And anyway, his mum was convinced that, yeah, good on you, mum.
So Laura also, like, being European, she does a lot of videos about annoying millennial women when they return to the US or Canada from a trip to Europe. So, like, the one girl that just got back from Italy or the one girl who just got back from France. And I guess it's also applicable to Australian women when they return from their Europe trip, like, feigning that they're very cultured and sophisticated. And I go to Europe maybe once or twice a year normally to visit family. So I found this very close to the bone. Am I like this? Oh, yes, that reminds me of when I was in Italy.
Last summer.
oh yes, that one little cafe that we love. Blah, blah, blah. Like, oh my God.
Yeah, I think you should stop that immediately. Well, I think that's it.
Yes, that's it.
So I'll.
I've got to go. Go put your tongue.
Yeah,
on.
You can be all. We can be all zhushy.
Zhushy.
I'll see you at the event.
See
Bye.
You. It's Jackie Keys from On The Tools. We love doing the podcast and we hope you like it too. Judging from the emails, you do. Don't forget to like us and subscribe to us on whatever platform you listen to the show on. If you have any suggestions or feedback, let us know and we'd love to hear from you. But don't tell our producer, Hugh. He doesn't trust us.